Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
Hello, everybody. We're just getting it all ready. I've been chatting to Tim. He's been telling me that he's quite enjoyed the COVIDs. Hello, Glyn. Hello, Jane. Hello, Carolyn Cooper. Hello, Anne. Just bear with me. Buttons are pressing here, and I am just making sure that we're going live on the YouTubes because we don't know. Leave those good people out as I did a couple
of live on YouTube as well.
We are Tim. I tell you this, this Dumpty Dum thing we're getting everywhere.
That's fantastic.
Just whilst YouTube is booting up, how's your lockdown been, Mr. B?
Well, I think it's the same for everybody. There's two things that, on the one hand, it's extremely depressing and really upsetting and ghastly and awful, but there have been the upsides to it. And I'm here with my in London with my wife Judy and my son Jasper, and we've been now in the house together for whatever it is three and a half months, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had a row. We've been together in a way that we haven't been for ever, really. And we've been playing games and we've been talking and, eating a lot together. And Judy's a great cook, so that's nice. And we're very lucky. We've got a house that's on four floors where we brought the children up. We've been here since 1982. And we've got a garden and, in the sunny weather, we've been sitting out and getting a suntan. And so in that sense, we're blessed. I mean, I think about the people, around, and the council estate opposite, where the screaming and shouting that's going on in some of those, those flats. And it was a single mum across the way with, three children who are very young. And I just, it must be torment, the agony and the awfulness that's going on around the world. And I think, whenever we get a bit depressed and upset about it, you just think, God, how lucky we are, really. And also, from the point of view of being an actor, I mean, I've got mates here in the theatre who are absolutely destitute and completely stuffed.
I did see that post which you put on Facebook the other day, and I hadn't thought about all the other ancillary industries which are affected by theatre not taking place.
That's it. It's the support industries that go with it. I mean, there's absolutely everything that it's not just the production and the actors. It's all the support people as well. And it's like in a pond. It just goes further out. And telly. I mean, I was doing a telly. I got a nice part in a new big HBO series for Netflix, and that stopped halfway through it. I mean, presumably that'll get going again afterwards, and it's a hiatus at the moment. But you know, there are people who are doing whose careers have just completely and utterly stopped, and I really fear for people leaving drama school at the moment. I mean, you know, they haven't got anything to start with. They haven't got anything to get their foot in the door. But this is true of so many industries, and you know, and everybody has suffered, but the arts have suffered particularly badly. I mean, you think about the theatre. I mean, somebody put up a post the other day, said, "Oh yeah, it's absolutely fine to go to the pub now and get pissed and shout at people in the pub and spray them with your aerosols." But for people going to a classical music concert, you know, who are going to be sitting there like that, they're not allowed to sit next to each other. I mean, nobody shouts and screams at a classical music concert. Or, you know, but on the other hand, if you go to a stand-up routine or a comedy show, people are laughing a lot, you know, so you're going to be laughing and you're going to be... So then you've got a thing of being an actor on stage and looking out at an audience where it's only half full. I mean, one of the things about when you go out on stage and you get the first person that comes back off the stage, they say, "What's the house like?" And they go, "Oh, you know, it's a bit empty." Or, "They're very nice, they're very receptive." You go out there and you're only ever going to get half the amount of people you ever would do. You're going to come back, go, "Well, it's a bit quiet out there." And they're all wearing masks. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm lucky. I'm doing audiobooks. I've done three episodes of Space 1999 for Big Finish.
I have to stop you on that, because the 8-year-old me was well into anything Gerry Anderson. And 1999 was just, it takes me back. Was it the Interceptors? Oh, I don't know, whatever. They're on the moon. I didn't even know they were bringing it back. So tell us about that.
Well, they're on the moon, and the moon gets sort of nuclearly blown away from Earth. So we don't know what's happened to Earth, because Earth's been left behind without a moon. So it's obviously not in a very good state. But they're traveling through a wormhole in space on the moon. And it's like Star Trek. It's like a sort of British Star Trek, if you like, because every episode they encounter a new planet where they might want to be able to put their feet down. And of course, they all turn out to be evil. And you spell evil, E-I-L, evil, you know, like that. And I am Space Commissioner Simmons. So I'm the rather pompous Pratt, who is a little bit of a coward, but, we're about to record two episodes, Monday and Tuesday. And Simmons comes good in that. So that's quite fun. And I built myself this little studio downstairs underneath the front steps, which is acoustically dead. I mean, I've always had all the kit and everything here, but it's never been acoustically dead. So I can actually do an audio, because you can do almost everything as long as it doesn't reverberate off the walls. But with an audiobook, it's got to be absolutely silent. And it is, apart from when the postman comes and he goes doom, 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 up the stairs. They have to stop.
That sounded like the end of EastEnders just then for a second. So how are you using that same studio to record your monologues for The Archers, or did you get that kit from the BBC?
Well, I've had the kit for ages, but I had to match the kit that they sent out so that we matched. So they sent us this, this really nice USB mic. And a cowl, which is called an Aston something cowl, that you've seen the pictures of it. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes around the back, and that makes it that absorbs a lot of the bounce of the sound. And then people have put their duvets, you know, around it, or put themselves in cupboards and things like that, because what you've got to do is replicate what we have in Birmingham at the mailbox, which is an anechoic room, which is called the dead room. And you've seen the pictures of it with all the, you know, acoustic tiling and everything. And the reason why that works is because they spend a lot of money on it. And you know, it's hundreds of thousands of pounds to kit that thing up like that. And what you've then got is you've got the ability to be able to be far away from the microphone and project. And there's no bounce off the walls at all. You don't hear that you are in a room. And so there you are with your background and, you know, up on Lakey Hill. And when you're in the dead room and you shout, it sounds like you're outside, and you cannot replicate that in your bedroom. I don't know if you, I mean, I noticed it when I did the very first one, and I have to shout at the dog. And even though I was, and this is before I built myself my studio downstairs, I was literally in the bedroom with duvets around it and that thing. And when I tried to kind of pretend shout, you know, hey, you know, but you could hear it. I could hear it. You know, I'm meant to be on the field, and I could hear that I was in a room. And that is what the problem about that they had was. I mean, I work with Andy Partington, who's the engineer there. And I work with, because he knew that I'm a techie and I've kind of got all the gear. So I kind of helped him to get this whole thing started and how we were going to do this. And it became clear right from the off that there was no way you were going to match two people in two different rooms to make them sound as though they were in the same room, even though they had the same microphone. The acoustic of the rest of the room made it sound like you weren't. I mean, I think in the due course of time now, with all of this happening, people's expectations of professionalism have kind of dropped. So the people are used now to seeing people on Zoom, not being in a professional studio, being in their own, you know, rooms at home. And I think, you know, going forward, that what will happen is that this, you know, that they will introduce it, because it's, yeah, I mean, you know, it's been great seeing inside our heads and what we think and everything. Somebody made a lovely point, actually, was to say that because of isolation, here we all are isolated, that actually the idea of us just talking, being on our own, you know, being on our own in our own headspace, rather well reflected the idea of being of isolation, that you weren't actually engaging with other people. You were more introspective and thinking more. And, you know, it can't, of course it can't go on. It's been a fantastically good experiment, and I think it's really, you know, really exciting, but that's not ultimately what a drama is. Drama is about, you know, essentially is about conflict and story, and there's only so much you can do with that. I think it's been a fantastic experiment, and I'm looking forward to what they do next with it, because they will, they'll develop it. Cheers, everybody. By the way, sorry, can I just do a shout out for the David Archer Appreciation Group, who I think are out there. Hang on, let me just have a look at the gallery view here. Let's see, where are you all? Oh, hello. I'll see. Who, can you put your hands up? Who's in the David Archer Appreciation Group? Can I see one? Sandra? Who else? Where have we got you? Where's Carol King? Oh, look, God, there's pages of you. Carol, hello, Carol. Hello. Hello, who else? Melissa is outside by a swimming pool. God almighty, cool. That's really great. We're going to find out where Melissa is. And sorry, any more
ways? You hijack away, sir. Yeah, this is your evening on Dumpty Dum. So
thank you.
You do your thing.
Pat, hello, Pat. This is great. Why is this so lovely? Oh, bless you all. Thank you very much for coming along. This is lovely. Cheers. Cheers. Well, I'm drinking Adnam's Ghost Ship, if anybody wants that. It's a very good one.
If we're giving a shout-out, I need to say hello to the people who are on YouTube. So to Leslie Sams, Coconut Rosie, Laura Jackson. Hello, Laura Jackson. She's over there somewhere in the States. Sarah, and I can't quite read your surname there because I don't have my glasses on. Simon Hall, Beth Parnell, Ruth Pearl, Linda Bryson, and Ray something or another. There you go. Those are the people who are chatting away on YouTube. And we, Mr. Bentinck, we actually have a record amount of people concurrently on both streams. We're up to about 120 that are watching. So I have to ask you this question, because very obviously everybody understands the reason why the format of the show needed to change. And the very fact that we have something from Ambridge is great.
Yeah.
But the critical reception has been mixed. So how are the actors reacting to that? How are you reacting to that? The fact that, you know, there are people writing articles saying they hate it, and there's some people saying, well, I completely understand, etc. You as an actor, you're in the middle of this whole thing. How do you react to that kind of mixed reception to?
Well, I mean, we're all we're all used to mixed receptions, you know. It's and it was what, as you know, I'm an old geek. I mean, I'm a computer programmer, and when when social networking started, you know, we'd been doing the Archers long before that, and when Twitter came along and Facebook came along, and I came on it, and it started off as a but people were taking it like an academic course. They were approaching it as though it was a university thesis, you know, as a literary course about the Archers. And then it was when people started to get really rude, and we all accept that about our characters. It doesn't matter what people say about our characters, you know, we're there to be knocked down. It was when people got personal, started talking about the actors, that I just went, nah. You know what? I think I might just miss out on that one, because everybody's entitled to their view, of course. I mean, in any character that I've played in my life, some people will like that character and some people won't like that character, and it's what you sign up for. It's part of the course. But to answer your question about this specifically, we all thought, well, the very first thing to say, is it better to have it or to have not had it? Because that was the choice, essentially. You either said, we're going to take the Archers off the air because we couldn't carry on doing it in the studio. So it was either you've got the Archers or you haven't got the Archers. So this is the Archers, but not as you know it. And you're going to hear inside people's heads. And that there it was presented, and you going, okay, I like this. I like hearing what people are thinking. I never realized that character thought like that, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't like it, then you've got no Archers, you know, then it's your choice. You can turn it off and just wait until it all comes back, because it will, you know, it will come back. And there's just going to be a hiatus. So this is a sort of a filling point for people who are happy to just hear, you know, what we're all thinking and an experiment in weird, weird times. And I'm incredibly, you know, proud, really, and impressed with the production team to be able to have got this together. Because I can tell you, mate, it's really challenging to do this. And you know, big shout out for Andy Partington, who's the engineer, and all the rest of the crew, all the writers, the production team, and everybody, to have got this together. They sent out, you know, we've got our Archer's microphone. That's what we've all got. And we've got our little Aston cowling thing and a mic muff, and we've got our headphones. They're actually rather a nice pair of cans. Thank you. And we all got sent this in the post. It was terribly exciting. And there's, you know, old geeky bloke here who sort of set it all up in 5.5 seconds. And other people were going, I've never even seen this. You know, what do we do? And again, how do you do it? Do you want me to just give me a quick lowdown on the technicality side of this?
Go.
Okay. So you can't, there's a thing called clean feed, which I've been recording. We've been doing ADR and dubbing, and we've been doing this Space 1999, Doctor Who, through clean feed. And what that means is that if at the other end they've got a massive, great, like 10 gigabyte pipe, to be able to accept the information that's coming in, if you've got a decent internet connection, you can record, and it'll go down the line in the same way that it used to with ISDN, and it will be recorded at their end, and they can record up to 6 tracks, 6 people coming in at the same time. Now, they couldn't. Andy wasn't in the BBC because he's not allowed in there, so he's at home. This is the engineer at home with a not very strong internet connection, not good enough for that. So the way we had to do it was we had to record ourselves locally. So there you are, you're sitting with your Mac, and you download a program called Audacity, which is a free program. And then what you're doing is you're recording each one of your tracks on that program. And you know, I know how to do that. A lot of people didn't know how to do that. So what Andy does is he comes down with Chrome Remote Desktop. He takes over your computer, he checks the levels and everything, and exports it at the right megahertz and bit rate and all that. And he is actually recording remotely on your computer. And then when the track's done, he then saves it into Dropbox, which he shares. So then it comes into him. He's then got all the things, so it's not coming down the line. It's recorded locally. And he then puts them all into Pro Tools or whatever, and then mixes it. So then you've got to balance it and put all the sound effects in the background and everything. And, you know, they're all doing that at home, having sent out all this kit to some of the actors. And that's why you're not hearing some of the older actors, because Paddy Green darling Paddy is not about to start setting herself up with microphones in her bedroom, you know, and the rest. I mean, Charles Collingwood, finally, you know, he's on. Charles hadn't got a computer before this. Oh. You know, Charles is a professional stick in the mud and he prides himself on it. You know, when he got a mobile phone, that was an enormous step forward for Charles Collingwood and Judy Bennett. Pride themselves, I haven't got a computer. Anyway, they got him online now. So, yeah, it's been a huge adventure, you know, really for us. And I get it, you know, if this isn't the Archers, I get that. And I'm sorry for people who don't like it. But the answer is the alternative really was that you wouldn't have had a programme.
I need to quickly pause and ask you a question, sir. There is a listener of Dum Dee Dum who is very close to my heart, right? A gentleman called Glyn Fullerlove. And I think that in error, Tim, you might have, what's the polite way of saying you ignore his messages on Twitter? He's a big fan of yours. He's a big fan. And actually, a few weeks ago, Glyn said, sorry. Oh, I think Mr. Bentinck, David Archer, is in error, kind of blocked me. So if you could speak to him and get him to unblock me, he will adopt me as his surrogate son. So if you can do that for me, Tim, after the show, I can see him now laughing his head off.
Oh, mate. Honestly, I hardly do Twitter. I really do. I mean, you know, I every now and again, because I turn notifications off, so it doesn't kind of come at me. Every now and again, I go, let's see what's on Twitter. Hang on, where is it? Where is he? Okay, well, I'll do it. What's his name?
Glyn Fullerlove. Glyn Fullerlove. And because I need to be part of the Fullerlove family. It's been an ambition of mine for quite some time. He's a very wonderful Dum Dee Dum listener. He's a stalwart. And
Fullerlove.
Yeah, full of love. Fullerlove. This is the most wonderful surname. I quite fancy being Royfield Fullerlove.
Is that his real name?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there he is
full of love. Yes. Great name. Hello, mate.
Hello.
Sorry, I didn't mean to block you. It probably the reason I would
have thought you might be bored about. I tend to tweet a lot about tax, so I thought you might find it a bit boring. You see,
could have been it.
It's at Glyn12gh. There you go. I'll meet myself.
Okay, I will unblock you immediately, Glyn, and I'm very sorry that I did, but it was probably when I was having to do my tax return and I went, no, I'm not having this one either. Brilliant. Oh, I'm so sorry. No, I don't. I mean, you know, again, the things that happened recently, there was a thing I happened on Facebook. We did a little radio sketch with Toby Lawrence, who plays
Freddie.
Yeah, Freddie, that's right. Thank you. Who's that? Somebody's
Amy. Hi, I'm Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy.
Sorry, I'm blind. And actually, Tim, we have spoken on Facebook briefly. You sent me a lovely message basically saying that I'm really sorry that I'm rubbish on Facebook, and I'm friends with Basil Clement, who
lovely Basil.
Yeah, dear old Basil.
Oh, great.
I'm sorry to interrupt there. I just...
No, not at all. No, but so we did this little sketch with me and... what's the other twin called? Freddie and Lily. Katie, thank you. And we did this really funny sketch that Toby had written, and we did it together and remotely, and he put it together. And I'll give you the URL for it afterwards. It's, you know, it's really funny. It's about a customer who's been held on hold music for an hour and finally comes through. And he's a bit Basil Fawlty, that's me. And we put this whole thing together, and it was a podcast, and we put it up on Facebook. And the nature of Facebook is it's really weird. If you put a link to somewhere else, you know, if you put a link to YouTube or something like that, Facebook decrees that unless it's got complete control and autonomy over it, it doesn't seem to get through to anyone. So just naughtily, I thought, well, let's just test this one out. So I downloaded a picture of a kitten, a rather cute kitten from the internet. And I just posted it up and just put a little thing saying, just experimenting. And I've got all these hits going, oh, what a cute kitten. Oh, well, blah, blah, blah. And half the time you put enormous amounts of effort into something. You know, you've written something and, you know, huge amounts of production and everything. You put it up and go, hey, look at that, you know. And people go, oh, yeah, right. And you put a kitten up and they go, oh, yes. So I'm slightly jaded with it. Also with the whole thing about Facebook at the moment, I'm, you know, and one of the things about lockdown is that this is great. You know, the fact that you're seeing, I'm meeting, having fun with friends and family and playing games and talking to people on Zoom and everything. And that, and the reality of the real people is so much better than the kind of the awfulness of endless downer that is social media half the time. You know, let's have something, you know, uplifting. If you're going to put something on social media, you know, be nice, be funny, be friendly, be creative. Do, you know, put something up that you haven't seen before, that's, you know, that's unusual, that's new. But I get worn down by negativity sometimes, and by people, you know, having a go and wanting to be conflict and all that.
I can only but imagine how being an actor in The Archers has changed from when you first came into it in the early 1980s, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's a case of instant feedback, isn't it? It's a case of fans being able to say, well, that show was good or that one was bad, etc. Whereas it was a completely and utterly, it was another world back then. You know, you guys really were in a bubble, in a silo back then, weren't you?
We were. And also people didn't, you know, people have got used to instant reactions now, because you have everybody, you know, everybody's a critic. Whereas in those days, you had to really, really get uptight to be Mr. Outraged of Tunbridge Wells and, you know, get on the typewriter and write a letter, you know, to the Times or to the Telegraph or to the BBC. You know, there wasn't feedback. There wasn't any feedback apart from letters. And the letters would come to the production office and they would be virtually ignored, really, you know, that, you know, because it didn't represent, you got 5 million people and you got five people who were, you know, upset about something, you're not going to pay attention to that because it's such a low percentage. Whereas now I think people do pay attention to what comes back. On the other hand, you know, it has to be said that, again, if you've got 5 million people listening to it, even if you've got, you know, 2,000 people who write in or who say something about something on Facebook, it's still very unrepresentative, because the vast, vast majority of people who listen to The Archers aren't commenting or saying or talking on Facebook. So, I mean, from my point of view, I really, you know, I'm terribly keen on everybody being able to say whatever they want. If you find yourself sometimes being attacked, you know, you tend to kind of shy away from that. And I've had a couple of comments where I've gone, that was unnecessary. So I just don't put myself up. I don't put my head above the parapet. Just let them get on with it. It's fine.
going back to the early 1980s, I think it's kind of part of the human condition that when you first get into something, whatever the heck it is, I love Formula One.
Yeah.
I'm still a fan of Ayrton Senna, and I still believe that Lotus should be a car and Nigel Mansell has a big bushy moustache, because I came into it in the early 1980s,
yeah,
the start at the time. And ditto for me, the Archers. I love change, but also I'm nostalgic for the past.
Yeah.
The cast was very different back then, wasn't it? It was people that had done rep or still doing rep. And tell us about some of those old characters, kind of like back then, back in the day, and just kind of quantitatively how maybe the type of person who now comes into The Archers, how that typical actor has kind of changed.
Well, I mean, we're all actors now, and have been for a long time. But when I first started, there were people who weren't, you know, who hadn't been brought up in the theatrical tradition and who were, you know, who were broadcasters, who were the real thing, you know, Harry Oakes and Chris Gittins and It was the old country characters who actually talk like that and wore tweeds and, you know, got their welly boots on and their pork pie hats and came into the studio and smelling of, you know, dung and almost. And they were very, very different. They were real country folk and they were the real deal, as it were. And it, I remember when I first came, you know, started in 1982. In fact, last week was my 38th. That was the 38th anniversary. It was literally last week with my first lines. Evening All was my first ever line. Yeah. And I wasn't going to be a policeman. But no, it was so weird. I mean, I came into this thing, which was a legend. And there were these two groups of people. On the left, you had all these old real country folk who, and then there were all these actors all calling each other darling and moaning about money and you know, about their agents and, you know, as it always has been. It was very, very different. You didn't go and sit in, you know, in their chairs. It was, it was frowned upon that you know, that you have your place. And there was a hierarchy. There was a hierarchical thing about it that the seniors were the seniors. And everyone smoked. And that was the other weird thing. You imagine standing around a microphone, everybody, you know, with a fag on or a pipe going. It was, and, you know, and talking about, you know, technically the dead room wasn't dead at all. You shouted too loudly. It bounced completely off the walls because they, you know, these cheap old rooms at Pebble Mill. It's all, you know, God, it's 38 years ago. It's extraordinary. I've changed that. I was the young thing, you know, I was the bright young thing. I was doing By the Sword Divided at the time. I was being a cavalier hero on horseback and I had long blonde hair and a sodding great gold earring in my ear and, you know, metaphorically a sword around my waist and big pirate boots and things came trundling in. And Paddy almost had a fit when I turned up that I was going to be playing her son because, I mean, I look back at it now. Here you go. Times change. That's what I look like. Take this off the wall. That was how I looked when I first started in 1982.
It's going to be dashing. Now, I have to say, for Amy and Lillian, are two blind.
Sorry. Yes.
You'll imagine. A dashing
Errol Flynn.
Exactly.
I don't know who that is.
Big pirate boots and a wonderful flowing white shirt. And whatever.
Yes.
I'm sure you're very good looking in that picture, Tim. I'm
thank you. It's all gone now. It's all dissipated now. It's just.
I bet that's rubbish.
Oh, just an old man now. Just an old man.
The old fart. Yeah.
And this is how I earn my living half the time. You see, half the time I'm doing lots of computer games at the moment, in which I play.
All right. Yes. Lovely chap. Yes.
Yeah. And orcs as well. Having to be orcs, and using my belly voice for that. For the fan of sword and sorcery.
when did you discover that you had this massive talent for voices? And it's something which we have briefly touched on before, and what utterly blew my mind was you explained to me how the New York accent, yeah, the roots of it, is Dutch. And,
yeah,
you know, the old name of New York was New Amsterdam.
Yeah.
So, when did you discover that you have this talent for voices and that you could actually make a living out of not only being an actor, but having this great talent for voices and for accents?
Very sweet of you. It's not a talent. I mean, I was sort of, you know, you're kind of bored with it. It's a music.
I can't do Jamaican properly, let alone Brummy, and I'm both of those things.
I can hear you, Brummy, mate. Don't worry. You can hear that already, right there. And I don't want to get into the other subject because, you know.
There you go.
You're a lot better at that than I am, mate.
We had a white, the taxi driver came to the door years and years ago, a little tiny geezer with glasses and a flat hat, opened the door, and he said, taxi for Bentinck. And I went, where are you from? He said, oh, man. He said, I'm from Jamaica. He's a white Jamaican, you know. You don't expect that. It made me laugh. Now, I had it. I mean, it's musicality. I mean, you know, there's the guitars behind me here. And I've always been musical. And it goes, apparently, the two things go together, that you've got an ear for music, then you've got an ear for accent. And it's just a weird thing. I can hear it and I can replicate it, you know, and I've got
I'm very like that, Tim. I'm very good with accents. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I bet you are.
I don't know if that's because I'm blind or what. I'm playing the blind card tonight. I do apologize. Right. If you want me to shut up, tell me.
Cool.
You know.
I think it's absolutely true. I think, you know, your sense of hearing is heightened because of your loss of sight. I think that's very true. You're very, very attuned to stuff.
Yeah.
I'm apparently going deaf. I went and had an ear test the other day and this very, very nice attractive Eastern European girl put me in a box and gave me a hearing test, and I came out and she said, "So, Mr. Bembling, you'll see here is the graph of your hearing, and here it goes along the top, is very good, very good, very good, and then here you'll see a dip that goes down and there." I said, "So what frequency is that dip?" She said, "It's exactly the frequency of female speech," which is why my wife had sent me to go and have a hearing test, because I keep saying what to her. I can hear everybody else absolutely fine. My son, mates, everybody like that. Judy, selectively deaf.
On that note, I have to pause because we need to start by doing basically the dumdy dum quiz. So if you haven't got pencil and paper, or maybe you've got a slate there and a bit of chalk, or anything else, I suggest you go and get that now. And whilst you're getting that, I need to tell everybody, go and vote for Dum De Dum on the British Podcast Listener's Choice Award. Now, go on to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Now, we probably won't win because we never have any year that this August award has been running, but we always get an honourable mention. So much so that I think the first year, which is about 3 years ago, we were actually invited down to the awards ceremony. So we won't win because we're not one of those cool metropolitan hip podcasts, but it's nice to get a mention because we are a community. So it's at the bottom of the screen, British Podcast Awards, Listener's Choice, and it's britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Go give us a vote. We might get a mention. Now, I've tested this, everybody, and it is up and working. So here we go. We start off with the pitch around. It is the infamous Dum-De-Dum pitch around. Play along with this, Mr. B. Okay. This is an archer's thing or person. So what we have here is an animal which likes to rummage around in muck. Is the first image. Then we have something which we put our stuff in. Something that's a bit of an old-fashioned bit of furniture, which maybe pirates had to put their treasure in. And then the last image, we have the universal symbol of some type of humanity. And I'm explaining this for our non-sighted viewers. Right now. So this is an archer's thing or person. That is number one. It's an animal that likes to rummage around in muck and filth. And then we have an old bit of furniture, classically something that a pirate might like keep their doubloons in or their gold bullion. And then we have a universal symbol of some part of humanity. That's question number one. Number two, we have a substance which is white and powdery. So a powdery substance which is in a in some kind of jar, not in a jar, in a bowl, sorry. And then image number two, we have a whole load of vegetables. Well, there's some vegetables, there's some fruit there. It's very colourful. Then image number three, we have lots of lights. Looks like a stage of some sort. Maybe a pop star is about to appear. So this is question number two. We have a white powdery substance, and then we have a colourful fruit and veg, and then some kind of stage, which may be, I was about to say Michael Jackson, then I thought George Michael, showing my age. Some pop star, Ed Sheeran, might appear on. Again, this is an archer's thing or person. Then image number three, we have a number. The smallest whole number. And then we have a piece of material which has a little bit of metal underneath it. I think normally it's attached to something else. I'm trying not to give this away. And then we have a book, is our third image, and it's the Cambridge English KET for Schools Trainer book. So the Cambridge English KET for Schools Trainer, 6 practice tests. This is an Archer's thing or person. We will come back onto these at the end. Now, if you've been paying attention, you're going to ace the first couple of questions of the Timothy Bentinck round. When did Timothy begin his role of David? If you're good at maths, you've said this a couple of times, if you can subtract the years from where we are now in 2020. Was it A, 1979, B, 1982, C, 1985? If you've been listening, paying attention, if you didn't know this before today, you know this now if you've been paying attention. Question number two. What were Tim's first words on the Archers? And he just said it all about 5 minutes ago. Was it A, hello, mum, hello, dad, it's me, it's David? Was it B, evening all? Or was it C, I hope it's lasagna for dinner tonight? What was Timothy's first words on joining the Archers? Again, if you're paying attention, you've got that one. I thought there was going to be a real deep cut until Mr. B actually told us all about 5 minutes ago, if you're paying attention. Question number three. When being a man about town or the village in the 1980s, David had a trusty steed. What was it? Was it A, a Ford Sierra, B, a Ford Capri, or C, a Ford Escort XR3i? He loved that thing, and he went out a-courting in it. Was it A, a Ford Sierra, B, a Ford Capri, or C, a Ford Escort XR3i? I know we have listeners of a younger vintage, but if you just think of a young David Archer. He was young and he was thrusting. And which one of those racy cars do you reckon he would have driven around in? Question number four on the Timothy Bentinck round is, the name Bentinck appeared on the Archer's credits before Tim joined the set. How? I only learnt this today, folks. I will freely admit. Number A, the 9th Earl of Portland made an appearance on the flower at the Flower and Produce Show in the 1960s. Is that how the surname Bentinck appeared in the Archer's credits before Tim actually joined? B, Norman Painting used it as a nom de plume. Or is it C, Nelson, my favorite old character, sold a painting by Jasper Bentinck? So I'm going to read those again. The name Bentinck appeared on the Archer's credits before Tim joined the set. How? Was it A, the 9th Earl of Portland made an appearance at the Flower and Produce Show in the 1960s? B, Norman Painting used it as a nom de plume? Or C, Nelson sold a painting by Jasper Bentinck when he had the antique shop? And then the last question, David is a passionate man, but what thing gets on his goat the most? Is it A, badgers? Number C, Vince Casey? Or C, being owed money by his brother Kenton? Which one of those gets him riled up the most? So I'll read that again. Is it A, badgers? Does he hate a badger, our David Archer? B, is it Vince Casey? Ooh, he hates a brummy businessman who's trying to do him over on a deal. Or is it C, he hates being owed money by his brother? So there you go, folks. We will come back to those later on in the show. We'll get your answers. Tim, no pressure. And I say this every week.
Yeah.
Every actor, with the exception of Tim Pepperell, has got every one of their questions right. So
their own questions.
Yes, their own questions.
Yeah.
Pitch around, we'll let that go.
No, I've got my own questions right.
Okay.
The picture runs, I've got absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Not, I think you have to be a viewer of the Dum-de-dum does Zoom to realize how my mind works.
Okay.
And you can't kind of then get them.
They have to tune in on you.
Exactly. Yeah. You focus in. A few more questions before we kind of throw this out. At what point did you kind of realize, because, you know, you came in as a thrusting young thing. At what point did you realize that you'd moved from being the thrusting young thing to actually being a senior member of the cast? Obviously, the role of David, actually, the whole drama slowly revolves around Brookfield, and you are the patriarch. You know, you've become Norman Painting in effect, right? But at what point did you realize that, crumbs, not only have I been here for quite some time, but actually I'm not one of the new young things anymore. I'm actually part of in the nicest possible way, the grey senior set.
No, it is. And, you know, you go through these different periods and, you know, here we are now and there's a new generation. There's a sort of the next generation that is forming now. And the ones who were the bright young things 10 years ago are already looking, you know, at the youngsters and going, you know, you've got all my episodes made and things. No, it was, I think the answer was when they said that David and Ruth were going to take over Brookfield. That was the turning point. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, even though Phil and Jill were still alive and they handed over the running of the farm to us, that was a huge turning point, really. And then having children, you know, and becoming parents, and the rest. I mean, everything else has been a gradual thing, but those, I think, were the two turning points. Is, you know, is running the farm and becoming parents, and then, you know, now grandparents. But then you've still got June Spencer, who's 100. And so we're still not the oldies yet. I mean, I'm, you know, the other great thing about David is that he's 6 years younger than I am. So I've got eternal youth with David Archer. And, you know, this thing about him turning 60 and having a midlife crisis and, you know, not being as fit and strong as he was before, I'm going, get off, you know. I'm perfectly all right. I'm still fit and as a flea, thank God, touch wood. Say that, not these days. But anyway, and David's 6 years younger than me, so, you know, they're a tough breed, farmers, you know. So it what an extraordinary job. What an extraordinary job to have joined up when I was 29, and here I am age 67 and I'm still doing that job. And that in that might be true of other jobs, but not acting. There's no other thing, unless you were in a, you know, Coronation Street or EastEnders. But I mean, we've been going longer than any of them. So, and also the great thing about that is that I wouldn't want to have been in a soap, in a telly soap, because I'd never have had all the, you know, the parts that I've played in on stage and on screen in film and in television and all the other things that I do. Because you'd be typecast if you were, you know, you'd just be that one character in that soap opera. Whereas with David, yeah, you know, people, I come on screen and or on stage and things and they go, I've heard that voice before. But they don't associate my face with David, you know, in the way that you do with a screen character. So they'll get, you know, I remember I did Educating Rita down at the Watermill Theatre in Reading. And I've got the local papers. You know, I've got national press, but the local paper wrote and said, and then onto the stage came the dulcet tones of David Archer. And I went, what do you have to do? But, you know, that goes with the territory. Also, the thing is that, I don't know about you, I mean, people say, they've often said to me, it's only when I tell them, you know, or somebody says Tim plays David on the Archers, that I could have been talking to them all evening and they wouldn't recognize my voice because I'm not David. That's only when they are told, they kind of retune and they go, oh yeah, now I can hear it, you know. But I've never, I don't think ever in my entire life had anyone go, wait a minute, that voice is familiar. Do you play David in the Archers? Because it's out of context, you know. It's And it's not me. I mean, David doesn't talk like I do. Do you know what I mean?
Last question from me before I throw it out to the dum-dums. After this amount of time of you being on the show, almost 40 years, do you feel paternalistic towards the other actors? And I don't just mean the younger actors, but do you feel paternalistic towards them? Because I think you do. Graham Seed said something really lovely about a month ago when he came on. He was incredibly honest about the way that he felt when he got the news that that the role of Nigel was being axed. Mm. You know, he said, "I cried, Royford, I cried." You know,
yeah.
And also the way I was told, I thought I deserved a little bit better than that. You know, just to be told over the phone, I wasn't called into the office and whatever. And he said, I got depressed. And he made a point of saying that my mate Tim was really angry on my behalf and stuff. So I'm guessing that you not only have a connection to the role, but also that you look out for your fellow actors, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, we had a thing recently with me and Toby, we're in a film, and the guy who was directing it behaved really badly. And so I pulled out because he'd behaved really badly towards Toby. And he was a fellow actor, so I just pulled out. And I do. I mean, I can't, one thing I cannot bear, I really, really cannot bear, almost bear, is bullying. I cannot bear bullying. And I think that's because I got a bit bullied when I was at my prep school, not physically, mm-hmm. but mentally. And whenever I saw bullying happening with my children, it used to drive me up the pole. And I cannot stand bullies, which is one of the reasons I so detest Trump, you know, for instance, because he's a bully. I cannot bear the abuse of power. I really, really can't bear it. And so I will, you know, I look out for the people who can't defend themselves and people who are being, you know, are being attacked. But also, when you say the cast, that wasn't David and Nigel. That was Tim and Graham. And what we are as a cast is we're family. And the longer you've been in it, the closer you are to that family. And then when people come into the cast, the younger members of the cast, it's like they've joined an extended family, and we're very we're tight, you know. We accept, and they're not threatening, you know. Yeah, you know, bastard, you've got 12 episodes this month and I've only got one, but that's banter, you know. And that goes with the territory. You never know how many episodes you're going to get, and the storyline's going to go down there. It's going to go down there. And you never ever resent the actor doing it. We for a long time, me and Felicity had a guaranteed 6 episodes per month under Vanessa Whitburn from years and years and years. Can you imagine what that felt like for the other actors? You bastard! You know, you've got guaranteed episodes, and we just don't know from month to month what we're going to be getting. And I know that the actors behind our backs were going, you know, bloody Tim and Flick, you know, they've got all these episodes, Sodom. And, you know, that's par for the course, but that's banter, you know, it's not, and they knew it wasn't our fault. We were just lucky. They were going, you lucky bastards. And we were. And now that, you know, I don't know whether, I mean, I haven't got any episodes this month or next month, but I've got a lot of other work. So, you know. It's a job. It's a job. But the thing about the Archers is it's more than a job, because what it actually is, it's a group of people who you get very close to people when you're in theatre. You know, you do a job in theatre and you're in it for whatever, you know, months or weeks or even years. And you get really close because of the fear, because you're on stage and you're in front of people and it's terrifying. And all you've got is your mates to help you and look out for you and to support you. And we've got that as a group of people who are a tightly knit bunch of people who've got this privilege of being in the Archers, and we all treat it as a privilege, and we are we look out for each other, and we love each other. And the longer we've been in it, you know, I've been in it, it's say for 38 years. There are people, there are actors in it I've known for 38 years. There are some of the younger ones I've only known for 1 year, but then you get people who come into it and make a you know, an impact, like James Cartwright, for instance. I mean, you know, who plays
Harrison. Yeah.
You know, James comes into green room. Hello, my mate. You know, comes up with your stonking great hug like that. All right, old fellow, mate. You know, and he's just this ball of energy. And when he came in, he said, Tim, he said, got to tell you, mate, I've no idea what I'm doing. No idea. Because he's a great actor, but he'd never done radio before. How do you do it? And I'd do something, and he'd look at me and go, mate, what are you doing? And he picked it up, and he went with it, and I gave him, you know, we'd give little hints. Yeah, am I allowed to? Can I say, you know, can I suggest maybe do it a bit like that? And he go, yeah, tell me all, hungry. I'm hungry for it. So we'd given him all that. And now he's one of, you know, he's a fantastic and strong member of the team. And all of them, they all come in, and some of them have never done radio before. And they learn, and we, you know, we help. We don't give them notes, but we kind of give them little hints, and we're supportive, you know, and we don't take the piss, and we don't denigrate them, and we don't talk behind their back, unless it's Graham Seed, in which case we do. Seed does.
You talked about privilege before, and that you're privileged to be part of this, I'm going to say, veritable institution. And we are privileged as fans of the Archers to have you in front of us on this Friday evening. So if you have a question for our Tim, wave now. And all right, Quentin Rayner, right? You've been outed, sir. If you want to unmute yourself there, Quentin. You've been outed. Tim, there's this dude. He's about to ask you a question.
Right, I can see you. Hello, Quentin.
Hi, Tim. He like, every week he asks great questions. So much so, a couple of weeks ago, I said, why don't you just do dum-de-dum, right? He's only a BBC TV newsreader.
Oh, so you are.
Anyway, Quentin, you're up. Go for it, mate.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Quentin.
I don't know if Roy Fields warned you, but sometimes these exchanges actually get quoted in the national press because the Telegraph from last week, and my exchange with Kerry Davis was quoted in the Daily
Telegraph. Yes, I did see that. Yeah,
I have heard this, and I was warned by our press guy, you know, that I normally I'm Roy Field will ask me a question, and I'll answer it, and this time I put it like a politician.
So the press there. They're watching, they're listening, Tim. Right. What I tend to do on these is just some quick-fire questions, frivolous, and most people seem to enjoy them. So
okay.
Shall I throw you some quick-fire questions?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I've done a bit of research on you, Tim, so I've got to ask you this. What are you more proud of? You know, 38 years on the Archers or 15 years as the voice of Mind the Gap on the Piccadilly Line?
Ah, well, the one you could attract me with is it's 8 years as the voice of Victor Saltzpire in Vermintide, for which in America I've got a massive following. When people find out that I am the voice of Victor Saltzpire in Vermintide, they go, oh, man, you're kidding me. You're a legend. So if in America they wouldn't know David Archer, but they would know Victor Saltzpire. And no, the answer is the Archers. That was...
Can you give us a Mind the Gap moment? We're on the Piccadilly line.
I'm no longer there. They pulled me. But for something like 18 years, if you pulled into Holborn, you would hear, please mind the gap. This is Holborn. The next station is Russell Square. Please stand clear of the closing doors. And nobody ever got the fact that was David Archer.
What's it like to hear you, sir?
Apart from Graham Garden on, I'm sorry, I haven't a clue.
Yeah. What was it like to hear yourself on the station? Must be weird.
It was very weird, but it was very nice for my children because they used to travel on the tube and they used to feel that their father was looking out for them.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got one about the Archers. In real life, Tim, would Pip give you the pip?
I haven't got a daughter. I only have two sons. So she is my erstwhile daughter. She's the daughter that I never had, apart from my niece, Sophie, who's my sister's daughter, who's in reality the closest I've got to a daughter. But yes, Pip would have given me the pip, but I would always have loved her all the way through and seen her inner beauty and charm and wondrousness, which is there and yes. Which will in no doubt come out. I mean, what's so lovely about being allowed to go through a fictional father-daughter relationship is that you don't, it ain't real, man. You know, it's great.
It's not real. Oh, I thought it was real. Are you still in touch with your student flatmate, Daniel Day-Lewis?
No, I wish. No, he's. I saw him once in the street, but he's very private, Dan. You know, he's a very private man. He's in Ireland. He's in a castle in Ireland, I think. But what's nice about Dan is that I saw him being interviewed on Parkinson years and years ago. You know, well, not years ago, but. He was very, very famous, you know, then. And watching Dan, and I thought to myself, if we did run into each other, he would be the same boy, you know, he would be the same self-effacing, modest, sweet, thoughtful, charming boy that I knew at Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. For all his three Oscars, the bastard. Mind you, he didn't get David Archer, did he?
Can I have one more question, Royfield?
Just the one, then I'm kicking you off, sir.
Okay, sir. Right. You mentioned you're a bit of a computer whiz kid and you got all the kit going really quickly and so forth. This article, quoting Kerry, I was questioning him about why it was so restrictive. Now, here we are, 50-plus people all talking together, and we were all, a lot of us, missed the dialogue. And I know you've gone through the technicalities, but are you entirely convinced as to why it's not possible still technically to have dialogues, given the whiz-kiddery that, and the technology that is around and capable people like yourself?
I am but a humble actor, and I'm not in a position to be able to answer that question. You really need to talk to the team. But I think the answer is because of professionalism and high standards, is that from Andy's point of view, it wasn't going to sound right. You know, to a non-professional ear, we could have got away with it, I think. But it wouldn't have sounded right. It wouldn't have sounded like the Archers. And this was an opportunity to do something which I think is extraordinarily original. And has never been done before. It's a complete departure. And it was an experiment. And it's, you know, some people have liked it and some people haven't liked it. But it would have sounded really, really weird if we'd gone straight into dialogue. And I think this is a way in. I mean, I can't speak for the team, but I'm pretty sure that this will develop, and that as we get better at it I thought of doing a little kind of a joke video of saying, here I am at home and I've got, the millions of pounds that's spent on acoustically proper rooms. Here I am outside. And then I cut to me outside with the microphone, you know, outside in the garden, recording it onto the computer, and then in my shed, and then in the shower, you know, with the shower going, and then go out into the high street and then sit there at a table like Monty Python, you know, and now for something completely different in the high street and say, and look, it sounds like the high street. I'm still going to do that, actually. I think that's going to be real.
You should
fun.
Do it.
So
well,
I think, as I said to Royfield before about this whole thing, it was an experiment. It's extraordinary. It's novel. It's new. I think it's slowly running its course, and it will develop and become something even better.
Well, in my career, I've had the honour of interviewing and talking to many famous Davids, David Hockney, David Attenborough.
Wow.
Now, David Archer.
There you go.
Radio royalty. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Quentin. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Who's got another question for us? Hold your hand up. Oh, Philippa Hall.
Yes.
That is I live and breathe. You are up, Philippa. Can you, there you go. You're up.
Yeah.
Ask me a question.
Thank you. Hi, Tim.
Oh, sorry. Where are we?
I'm waving.
Oh, God, hang on. I've got to put you on gallery view.
I'll keep waving.
Waving. Where are you? Yeah, there you are.
Philippa.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. That's me. Yeah. It's a very serious question, Tim. Colin the camper van. Yeah. When will we have a sequel?
Hang on. What you're talking about is Colin the Camper Van, my book for children. And shortly after publication, I wrote the sequel to it. And it's a very small publisher's in Norfolk. And she's been saying to me, We will. I wrote it. And we've got all the drawings for it as well by the brilliant Owen Claxton. Fantastic drawings. It's a much better story. That was written for my kids as a sort of a bedtime story when they're about five. And it's a very short story. This one has got, you know, it's a proper thing. I've also written, and now just recently, six short stories for older children. But the answer to your question is, I wish I knew. Because I've been lazy about it because I keep emailing us. Are we going to get this out? Oh, yeah, no, we won't. So what I'm going to do, I mean, I've been meaning to do this, is on the back burner to take both of them and to go to a children's, you know, a literary agent who specializes in children's book.
Well, we look forward to the next one.
Thank you. I'm very, have you got a camper van?
No, but we came to listen. You did a talk with a literary festival. And my son and I came along and yeah, he loved the book. So we're waiting for the second one.
Good. No, there's another one which I wrote, which is the sequence of short stories, which is about the little people. Again, it goes back to not being bullied. It's about the little things that you don't notice. And it's like the banana that thought she was a star because when she was growing, she looked up and she saw the crescent moon, among other stars. So she thought that she was a star. And then you won't go through the whole thing of coming from South America to Europe and what happens. It's the banana that gets left on the in the bowl and never gets eaten and goes rotten, you know, but it becomes good. And then there's the one called Nigel, the nail that bent, which I was asked to read some short stories, and it's about a nail in Wales. And my Welsh accent is, you know, is all right for a bit, but after a while it goes off. And so I got my friend Wayne Forrester, who is Welsh, to read it. And I'll give you the URL of that too. And he reads it beautifully. And it's a sweet story. I have to say, when he read it, and it's the first time I've ever heard my words being uttered by somebody else. And it's a joy when that happens. And he does it so well. And I have to say, it's a rather sweet story. And so you've got me going now. I'm going to package this whole thing together, and I'm going to get a children's literary agent, and I'm going to get them going.
Can I just quickly jump in? Because yes. Philippa has a wonderful podcast called the Quick Book Reviews Podcast.
Uh-huh.
So I reckon, right, that you need to get your people to speak to her people. So when you've got your book out, you can go onto her podcast and pimp it. Good style.
Excellent. While you're doing that, while you're finding the next, while you're getting the next person, I'm going to find
Alrighty.
The URL for that thing. Hang on a sec.
Alrighty. Glyn Fullerlove, you're up next because you've got the great man's book I can see there. So, well, I'll tell you what, Glyn, I'm just a whole fire on that now. Just wave if you've got a question. Lovely to see you, Francesca Word Salad.
Yes, bye-bye.
Claire Asprey, you've got a question. Amy Gilbert's got a question. I'm looking on to the next... You keep waving if you've got a question. Melissa Williams has got a question. Rosie McGlynn. Yeah, you had a go at me last week, Rosie. I don't know if I should be coming to you, but you are very good with your question. All right, I'm going to get to everybody. Right, Tim, are you ready to accept questions, sir?
Absolutely, yes. No, Chrome has gone and hung, so I can't do it at the moment. But what I'll do is I will send you some links to the things that I've been talking about, and you can publish it on your dumdy dums.
All righty. Claire Asprey, you are up if you want to unmute yourself, chicken.
So it's a very quick comment, not so much a question. And I'm just on behalf of the Academic Archers, given that I've spent a fair amount of time in the last couple of weeks writing up a chapter for the next Academic Archers book, to say that it's a very valid way of engaging with the programme, and it's a great bunch of people. So... I think it's really interesting how we can come at the programme with lots of different perspectives based on the kind of specialisms that we arrive with. Mm. And I suppose on that basis, if there's a question, it's about, given your personal specialisms, what would you bring to an analysis of the Archers based on what your specialist subject might be?
Do you mean in a literary... approaching it as literature?
Well, my specialist subject is housing policy, so that's the way that I look at the Archers, but we've got all sorts of different people coming at it from all sorts of different aspects. So I'm just interested in if there's a special interest that you have that makes you look at the Archers and in a different way.
No, it'd be farming, really, because, you know, that I've been very hands-on with that. I was brought up in the countryside. I worked on farms when I was a kid. My father decided that this, you know, when coronavirus came along, it's like justifying my dad, because first thing that he did after the war was he went and took his family down to Tasmania because he thought there was going to be nuclear war. He's a man who put his money where his mouth was. And I was born on a Tasmanian sheep station as a result of that. And then in 76, he decided that there was going to be worldwide famine and that he wasn't going to be the one to find the supermarket shelves empty. And so he upped sticks and went down to Devon and created a 10-acre organic small holding and lived off the land. And me and Judy went and helped him start that up and worked there for a year and got that going. So, I mean, that's one of the lovely things about being in the Archers is that although we're standing in a studio, in my head, I'm out there in the fields and working with animals and working with my hands and building things and making things. And so that's if I weren't an actor, I'd be making things. I'd be creating stuff with my hands physically. I've been here in this house since 1982, and virtually every single square inch of this house is my own work. I'm hands on, and that's the aspect of it I really, really like. And that's the part of David that I am. There's not a lot of David that I am, but his physicality is, and his love of nature and of working is me. So yeah,
everything I know about farming I learned from the Archers. My granddad was a farmer.
Yeah, well, my mate Tony Armour Training has got a T-shirt that said, "Everything I learned in life, I learned from Star Trek." So there's a lot to be said for watching the TV.
Thank you for that question.
Thank you very much indeed.
Rosie McGlynn. Now, I've got a little idea, Rosie and Quentin, and very obviously, Dum-de-dum is a community. And I reckon we should get you, Quentin, to do to host an episode of Dum-de-dum alongside Rosie McGlynn. What do you reckon, Rosie?
Awesome. Totally up for that.
Well, let's make it happen. Claire Asprey's given us an unequivocal thumbs up. This is your moment to shine, as you do every week, Rosie. Ask your question.
Well, I was going to say, first of all, just thank you, Roy Field, for making our Friday so special through lockdown. It's been wonderful. Oh, so I think we all really appreciate everything that you've done. It's really kept people going, and you've put a huge amount of yourself into it. So genuinely, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I am quite nice despite taking the mickey. just a really quick Archer's question. So my question is, will Vince Casey entice Josh further into the dark side and bring Brookfield down? Because Josh is that, Josh is looking for a bit of excitement. Vince Casey is that kind of guy. And obviously David doesn't trust him. So is there a potential kind of Doomsville scenario where Vince Casey just takes down your business?
Well, of course, there's always two answers to this question. The first one is, how many episodes does that mean I'm going to get? Which is, from Tim's point of view, the most salient question. And then the other answer is Vince is a sweet talker. He's got the gift of the gab. I thought, right from the word go, that from David's point of view, that he didn't trust him an inch. And then he came around and thought, well, maybe he's not so bad after all. But clearly he is bad. I think he's painted basically as a baddie. I don't see how one can possibly see Vince. I mean, the name Vince, sorry if there are any Vinces out there listening to this, but Vince is sort of a traditional English, black and white movie bad guy. Is Vince. Oh, no, not Vince. It's the something about the name. I think he's probably painted as a bad guy. And if my son thinks he's a good guy, then he's definitely a bad guy, because Josh gets everything wrong at the moment, because that's the nature of the young man that he is. Very, very gullible. So I think probably the answer to your question is that in the long run, he will escape Vince's clutches. Hope that's an answer. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that, Rosie. And Rosie and Quentin, we're going to make this happen in the next month or so. Right, Pat Brown, I'm coming to you after I speak to Melissa Williams, who looks like she's by the pool enjoying herself.
Yeah, Melissa, where are you?
Go on, Melissa, if you want to unmute yourself. Wait a minute, I'm trying to unmute you. I don't know what's up. There you go.
Where are you? Can't see you.
Melissa? You're waving furiously. I'm trying to unmute you. You can try and unmute yourself as well. There you go. There you go.
Okay, hi. Yes, Anna Marie Island, Florida. I've met Florida. Him. He has been so gracious to us. But what I want to ask you, is it lasagna or pizza?
What that I don't like that when cooked by Ruth.
What do you prefer?
Oh, I see. Okay, when I was at theatre school there, I used to have a test of restaurants to see who could produce the best lasagna, and the answer was right at the top of the hill in Bristol, which the most politically incorrect name that you can possibly imagine, but those Bristolians will know where I mean, up at the top of White Ladies Road. You get up onto the heath there, turn left, and there was an Italian restaurant just there that did the best lasagna I have ever tasted. Now, I am a very good, I make fantastic spaghetti bolognese. I'm second to none.
Yeah, Sam Batten.
But my new thing is that we went, I'm in the supermarket the other day and I saw lasagna and I thought, I know, I'm going to challenge myself to produce a lasagna that's going to knock even the one in Bristol into a cocked hat. So on the other hand, the Sorrento pizza on down at Highbury Corner, which does absolutely the best pizza I've ever had. And we were in San Francisco recently, and then we went and had the best pizza that will in the entire, in the whole of the United States, the best pizza ever. And he gave it to it. The one that Sorrento Pizza down on Highbury Corner is much better. So I love my pizza and I love my lasagna, but I think when it comes to it, pizza.
All right.
You got a good answer there, Melissa. Who else was waving? Who happened to come to? Because all of a sudden I can't see Pat. Okay, there you are, Pat. You were up. Go for it. And I got a bit of dead air there. There you go.
There you go.
Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Pizza or lasagna?
Lovely to see you. I met you. I think we've got two people on.
No, you're on. Go for it.
No, you're on, Pat. Good to see you, Pat.
All right. I think we met quite a long time ago in Birmingham. I think it was the 60th anniversary.
Oh, right. Okay.
And you were doing something with things in yogurt that make the sound of a newborn lamb. Something landing in yogurt was the sound of a lamb flopping out. You remember? Anyway,
I do.
I've been listening to the. Go on.
No, we did. Well, I had a one-man show, and at the end of it, we do the sound effects of lambing using yogurt and old quarter-inch tape, which is the straw, and a wet towel, which is the newborn lamb, and you drop the lamb on the wet straw, and you do the squelchy sounds with the yogurt, and then you have coming through the speakers the sound of a new lamb, and there it was, you know, the whole new life at Brookfield.
That's right. Well, I remember that. Anyway, what I want to ask is, I've been listening to the Nigel Pachter triptych. I wonder if you have.
I haven't. No, I heard about it.
You may well need to see a solicitor. What actually happened on that roof?
Well, I pushed him.
That's terrible. I couldn't
ban the man. You know, somebody had to do it. Somebody had to get rid of him. God. I just saw the opportunity. I thought, you know, I can't miss this one. So I gave him a shove in the small of his back. Whoops. Oh, dear. So sorry. And you must admit that the acting when he came down was fantastic. You know, the upset and the, you know, trying to deal with my sister. I think, you know, that was a pretty damned extraordinary performance from my part. But no, I pushed him. Yeah.
Oh, God, well, we heard it here first, folks. That's well, great.
No, yeah, we heard it second, because Graham told us a couple of weeks ago.
Well, he did. But in a triptych, he's slightly ambiguous about it.
Thanks for the question, Pat. All right, let's rattle through these questions because it's 20 past eight now. So please wave if I haven't come to you yet. Right, going on to the second page. Let's go back because I know there was somebody else. Lonnie Bihar, Mr. Witherspoon, you are up, sir. Go.
All right. Thanks. Tim, this isn't a question. It's a comment and a compliment. Uh-huh. As people know, I'm Witherspoon. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm a gay, Jewish, New York City psychiatrist, and I think And David Archer is my favorite character on The Archers.
Wow.
You know, David is the person I would sit down and have a pint with at the pub.
Fantastic.
I find him, he's a regular guy who's kind of dealing with life's everyday problems. And I relate to that. I'm a year older than he is in real life and in David Archer life. He was born, I think, in September 59. I was born in October 58.
Okay.
So I think we share a same taste in music. But again, I find David to be very personable. So I thank you for making David very personable and real. And I think that's a reflection of you, who you are as a person, as I can tell. So thank you, Tim.
Well, thank you so much. Are you in New York at the moment?
I am. I'm in my Greenwich Village apartment.
Oh, man.
It's a beautiful day in New York.
I worked in New York in in the 70s, I worked for a company called Foreign Study League. It was part of Reader's Digest, and I was a tour guide. I used to take students. I used to take them on tours around New York and organize these. And then the following year, I got a job for Trek America, which is driving around the States. Wow. So I had a 13-seater Dodge minibus full of tourists and drove through the northern states to San Francisco, and then dropped down and picked up another batch in L.A., and then drove them through the southern states back to New York again. So I spent an entire summer in New York. Do you remember the Schaefer concerts in Central Park?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. They had different sponsors, but I remember
Fantastic woman called Sherry.
Company, yeah.
A wonderful woman called Shelley Lazar, who's the sister of my boss there, Fran Lazar, and she organized them. So I used to get free tickets for the Schaefer concert. So every Saturday, I'd just be in Central Park listening to rock music. It was it was fantastic.
And I just want to give a shout out to Pat Hanavan, who has been my friend for 40 years. 40 years ago this summer, we were in Buffalo together. Her husband, Bill, was a medical school classmate of mine. And we've been friends ever since. And I got Pat re-listening to The Archers and to Dumpty Dum. So a shout out to Pat down there on the screen.
Cool. Fantastic.
Thank you for that. Witherspoon in the Upper Lower East West Side.
Yeah.
Do we have
a... You're in New York listening to us, man.
Before we go, Glyn, pull it up. I think you're going to be our last one then, Glyn. You are up, my new foster dad.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tim. I shall do a plug for your book, if anyone hasn't read it, Being David Archer.
Marvellous.
Definitely worth a read. And also, thank you very much for the shout-out for the theatre staff. I do have a daughter, and she's a theatre technician. Yeah. And so thank you for that shout-out. Yeah. My question is an Archers-related one. We've heard David musing about Ruth and about Ruth's lasagna.
Yeah.
If we are to hear Ruth, what will she muse about David?
Oh, God, what a good question. What's she got against David? I don't know. She's hard work. That's what I love about their relationship, actually. She's tough as old boots, Ruth Archer. She doesn't give an inch. But from David's point of view, you see, I don't know whether people really get this. He is completely sloppy about her. That's his weakness in a way. He's madly in love, and he is terrified that the cancer's going to come back. Mm. So that was the whole thing that happened with Sam, and that's why that scene when he finds out that she'd fallen in love with this guy was so powerful, because and that was the only time I actually really did have tears in my eyes in all these 38 years of actually, there was no acting required. It was really moving when he's so hurt because he thought that the cancer had come back and that's why she was behaving badly. And then out of left field, suddenly find that she's fallen in love with somebody else. That shook him to his boots. And I've played that. I've played, with that in my head from my point of view as David. That has never gone away, that he loves her to bits, but he doesn't quite totally trust her in the way. And he's terrified that either she's going to fall in love with somebody else or she's going to get cancer. So that's a lovely thing to play as subtext. And one of the things that we could, that could be done with these monologues is to find what's going on inside our heads. Those kind of secrets. But as an actor, what you're allowed to do is to let that come through as subtext rather than the words that you say. I mean, I said, when I was writing about this earlier, I said, in the past, what you hear is not necessarily what the character is thinking. And now what you hear is not necessarily what the character is saying. So it turns it on its head. It's quite fun. So I don't know whether or not she would say, I don't really like him. I don't know. I think she loves him. She does. She does. But I don't think she loves him quite as much as he loves her, which is fun. So he's always trying to win her. There.
Mm. Thank you for that great little bit of insight, Mr. B. We're about to start winding things up.
Good question. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
It was a great question.
Make me think about that. It was good. Thank you.
We're going to go on to the quiz, everybody. And we're going to get the answers. Here they go. So what do we have here in question one? The animal is a boar. It's a chest. And that is a symbol of femininity. So that is her. Boar Chester is the answer to the pitch round question number one.
I did get that one.
Yay. Well done. Number two. This is an archer's thing or person. Do you want to have a guess at this, Mr. Bentinck?
Sago Vegerina.
That very good guess. Totally incorrect.
Right.
The flower and produce show. That is flower. That is produce, image number two.
Yeah.
And number three, that is a stage with lights. It's a show, the flower and produce show. Glyn Fuller Love is nodding sagely there. He's got it. This one might be a little bit hard. Everyone's kind of shaking their head at number three. We have the number one. We have a bit of material with a bit of metal underneath it, then a book. The number one is also single. That is a wick, as in a candle wick. And I read this out, K-E-T, and I went, Ket, it's a single wicket. That's what that is. It's the single wicket. Glyn Fuller's going, oh, yeah. Pat Brown's giving me a thumbs down. How dare you, Pat? I thought it was quite good. Single wicket.
Very good.
Right, now, it's a Timothy Bentinck round, all right? When did Timothy begin the role of David? What year was it, Tim?
1982.
So B, 1982, and you did tell us in just before we went onto the quiz.
Yep.
Number two, which were Tim's first words on the archers? You also told us this. The answer is?
Evening all.
That was B again. When being a man about town or the village in the 1980s, David had a trusty steed. What was it? What car did you have, Tim?
That was C, a Ford Escort XR3i.
It absolutely was. Wasn't it red?
I think it was.
I think it was red. Yeah.
I went to the car show once, and I went to the Ford stand, and we were there. And I went up to the Ford guy, and I said, look, hi, my name's Tim Bentinck. I play David Archer in The Archers, as you probably know. He's just been given a Ford Escort XR3i. Can I have one, please, with it written on the side, David Archer, you know, and I'll do publicity for you. He looked at me as I was completely barking mad. Never.
Question number four. The name Bentinck appeared on the Archer's credits before Tim joined the set. How?
It was completely mad. Norman Painting wrote some episodes of the Archers under the name Norman Bentinck. And if you think of Painting Bentinck, it is actually a kind of almost a homophone. Painting Bentinck. And so when I turned up, Tim Bentinck, he simply couldn't believe this as a coincidence. I couldn't believe it either. I mean, quite extraordinary.
And I think I got that from your book.
I think it was in my book.
Yes, there you go.
It's in my book, yeah.
Last question. David is a passionate man, but which thing gets his goat the most? What really gets you exercised the most? Is it A, badgers, B, Vince Casey, or C, being owed money by Kenton?
Always, it's Kenton.
Well, I must admit, I didn't know the answer to that. I would have actually said badgers, but you are David Archer, so you say it's Kenton, it's Kenton. So if you answered Kenton, that is the answer.
Yeah.
So let's go back on to gallery round, everybody. Anybody get all eight correct? All right, then nobody's got a thumbs up yet. All right, seven. Jane's got seven. Nick and Neil have seven. Tim's got seven. I'm going to go on to the other page as well. Who has got seven? Anybody else? All right, so we're going to go on to those three very quickly. It is your time to bask. Right, so Nick and Neil. Are you the two gentlemen who are over in the Black Country, kind of Staffordshire way?
We are, South Staffordshire.
Ah. What question did you get wrong?
The car.
Oh.
I went three, but I didn't know.
I've got a sneaky feeling your vintage of the Archers doesn't quite go back to the 1980s. Am I correct?
I'm only about three, 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So you basically got them all right then. Okay, well done.
Time for Friday. I don't mind.
Who else got seven? Tim, coming on to you, sir. Yeah. Oh, it's Tim and Tim. It's the Tim and Tim show. Tim, which question did you get wrong?
I got the last one wrong. I thought it would be badgers.
Me too. I would have said badgers.
Well, it's a subjective answer. I mean,
I don't think it is, because I was trying to work it out, because I think all of them get your goat.
Yes.
But you've only killed one of them.
That is a very good point, actually. I think Tim should have an honorary point. I think anyone who said badgers should get an honorary point for that very reason, that he's only killed one of them.
Yeah, I said badgers as well.
And who else got seven? There was somebody else. Jane, coming on to you. Bask, Jane, unmute yourself. There you go. You're up.
Hey, hi. I got your excellent single wicket clue wrong.
Oh.
I didn't get it wrong. I had absolutely no idea. I've written down plumb line test book.
Almost. You're almost there. Folks, I think that's it. That's the end of our COVID coronas lockdown Fridays.
Oh.
I'm going to unmute you all, which means that you can now give our Timothy Bentinck a round of applause for being so wonderful and spending his Friday with us. So a round of applause for Tim.
Yay!
Yay! Thank you, Mr. B. As I said, everybody, that's just about is us done for this summer. For another reason, then, if I wasn't careful, I was going to run through all the actors blooming quickly if I kept on having them on every week. Timothy Bentinck, we thank you, we salute you for coming on and spending your Friday with us. Hopefully we'll get you back on Dumb before the end of the year, when everything goes back to relative normality.
Yeah.
And it's always lovely to see you, sir.
Well, you too, and thank you so much, Royfield. It's been absolutely wonderful, and I'm very pleased we haven't been invaded by any flashes or anything like that. And that was a plus. A bonus there. Once bitten, twice shy.
And it does add a certain frisson to the broadcast.
It does. You never know who's going to be there.
Exactly. You get seen and get these little men out and stuff. But listen, everybody, thank you for supporting Dum-De-Dum. If you want to do one thing, do us one favour. Go on to the BritishPodcastAwards.com/vote. You don't even have to be British to do it. So Lonnie Bihar over in the upper lower east west side, you can do it. Anyone from planet Earth, you know, let's go and vote for Dum-De-Dum. Let's get ourselves, let's get the Archers a little bit of a mention on that great award ceremony. We probably won't win, but let's get a mention. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Be good. Please stay. And Quentin Cooper and Rosie Porter. I'm coming to you guys very soon because it's going to be a very special host, very special episode of Dum-De-Dum. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Thank you, Tim. Bye bye.
Thanks, Rafe. See you, mate. Thanks a lot. Bye.